My guest at this time is Nebraska Republican Congressman Lee Terry. He's a Republican representing the Cornhusker State 2nd Congressional District, and he's a member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. He's joined us before to talk about the status of the Keystone XL pipeline, and he joins us on that topic again to discuss what the current status is, where the debate has gone since our last conversation, and how this is all likely to be resolved, and on what timetable. And, sir, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Greg. I appreciate being back.
The last time this really came to a head in Washington is that Republicans, mainly in the House, succeeded in getting it into an end-of-the-year appropriations bill, forcing the president to make an up or down decision on whether to greenlight the pipeline. He rejected it, but said it was still being studied. He still had some environmental concerns about it. We'll get to his economic thoughts on the subject in a moment, but right now, what's the status of this ongoing study, and when will we perhaps finally get some answers on this?
Limbo. It is in limbo. We passed another bill in the House that would just deem the Keystone XL approved based on two other pipelines in the history of Congress, one in 72 and one in 94, that came from Alaska through Canada and into the United States. And both times Congress just deemed it permitted. And where it's going, who knows? There may be a vote in the Senate this September, but we are still relying on the president to actually sign it.
Let's talk about both the energy and economic impact of the pipeline, if in fact it were to be given the green light. Let's start with the energy side of this. Just how much energy would we be getting from Canada, which by comparison would mean we're not getting it from less friendly places in the world?
You hit the most important part, and that's our energy security and energy independence. There will be more than enough oil flowing through this pipeline to U.S. refineries to completely offset Venezuelan oil. So it's part of our energy security package, and that doesn't completely get us off of OPEC oil. But it moves us to a more secure area, and if we use more of our natural resources and that we have in the United States, we can be independent. Then, of course, as you mentioned, it creates jobs. That's a bonus. It's a cheaper, more efficient way of moving oil to the refineries, and you're saving money, at least in the transportation costs that will be reflected in the gasoline prices at our neighborhood gas station.
Let me get your reaction to one question on the energy, sir. Critics of the pipeline say that, yeah, the pipeline would go through the United States from the Canadian border all the way down to the Gulf Coast, but a lot of that will still get shipped off to Asia and some other places, so the U.S. wouldn't be getting as much as supporters of the pipeline suggest. What are the facts on that?
Well, the facts are the parties that have contracted for that oil are refineries, not shipping entities. So the oil comes from the oil sands in Canada directly to about a half a dozen U.S. refineries that are expanding right now to accept that oil. So the refined products, just economically, you will say, are much easier and less costly to distribute in the United States. Now, there's no doubt, just like in our most dependent times on OPEC, we still exported things like diesel to Europe because we have a symbiotic relationship with them. We send them our excess diesel. They send us their excess gasoline. But there's lubricants, and there's, you know, there's dozens of byproducts from this oil that will enter the market in a variety of ways, and some of them will be exported. But for most of us that are worried about the price at the pump and our energy security so we can get in the car and get to work and get the kids to school, that's going to add to that level of security.
Onto the economic front now, the president has not made many public statements on this, but in one of his statements touting his jobs plan, he made this statement in kind of deriding the Republican push for the Keystone pipeline. Here's what he said.
Yeah, they keep on talking about this, an oil pipeline coming down from Canada that's estimated to create about 50 permanent jobs. That's not a jobs plan.
Sir, he obviously is in strong contrast to Republicans saying that at least the construction process would create about 20,000 jobs here. What about in terms of permanent jobs and the overall economic benefits from this project?
Well, it's a $6 billion infrastructure job. $6 billion private dollars coming into the United States to build this infrastructure project. And it'll have, like you said, 20,000 direct construction jobs, another 20,000 that'll be incidental and support manufacturing jobs in the refineries. So even the State Department says 42,000 jobs directly and indirectly created by this pipeline. Now, the president is right. The same study that at the State Department says 50 to 100 permanent jobs. Keep in mind, this is a construction infrastructure job. So when the construction is done and they're only going to focus on the construction, then there will be minimal permanent employees. But go on a bridge and tell me how many permanent employees are on that bridge right now that was finished. So the president in his own stimulus package was advocating for these type of projects to create jobs. But now when it's the pipeline, he uses it to criticize.
What about job creation in areas that would be impacted by the final product, whether it's in Houston or somewhere else along the Gulf Coast or somewhere else along the way where this impacts the local area?
Well, there's no doubt that most of the refineries that will expand and have more permanent jobs created by this pipeline are in Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Kansas. And so that's where the majority of the permanent jobs will be created. But the reality is that it has permanent economic impacts along its way because TransCanada has to pay taxes, personal property taxes, and they also have to pay the landowners for their eminent domain rights. And so there's long-term economic benefits to the communities that the pipeline goes through.
We're talking with Nebraska Republican Congressman Lee Terry. And, sir, you mentioned that things are kind of in limbo right now, but what is the House doing right now? You mentioned the House has passed it in a deem version, and you're waiting for Senate action. What else, if anything, can the House do?
Well, there's not a lot that we can do. We would need the Senate and the president to help us. So first of all, we keep pushing it, make sure that people don't forget that this important infrastructure, job-creating, energy independence issue is still out there waiting. But I do want to add that the president also has set up, and this is what I fear, when he talks about the life cycle, CO2, climate change, I'm wondering if he's going to say, we need a new study because I don't like the criteria that was used, even though that's from the EPA that mandated the criteria of the study. So I'm thinking what he's going to try to do is just delay it another 3.5 years.
Give our listeners a little bit of the history here. There's obviously many different areas where the energy debate exists. There's fracking, there's development on federal lands, there's drilling off the Atlantic or Pacific coast, the Gulf Coast up in Alaska. How did Keystone kind of become the centerpiece of this debate?
Well, and don't forget the coal.
Sure.
It became a center point of the environmental debate. Now, when the environmentalists came into Nebraska and started using some of our ecosystem as a reason to kill the pipeline, at that point in time, I decided to call them on that because the science disagreed with their position. The science said that our ecosystem would not be disturbed or impacted negatively. And I'm going with the science. And so I decided to start calling them out. And fortunately, the chairman of my full committee agreed, and we started pushing the issue.
And, sir, the president at one point tried to split the baby here and essentially allow the bottom part of the pipeline from Oklahoma down to the Gulf Coast to proceed, but not anything north of that. What's the impact of that?
Well, that's kind of frankly, it was just silly. The only thing the president has to do with this pipeline is to permit it to cross the Canadian border. Otherwise, all the states have the power in this respect. So the pipeline had already been approved by Oklahoma and Texas, and therefore the president had nothing to do with whether that was going to be built. TransCanada decided to start the construction in the southern just to make sure that they wouldn't lose everything and that they could still move oil that's coming out of Oklahoma and Kansas and those areas in the pipeline, even if the president was to deny the cross border.
Last question before we let you go, sir. You mentioned, obviously, that it's an uphill climb. The president may even call for a new study and delay it. So what's your gut on whether this will happen, and if it does, when?
Well, my hope is that we can do something this year in the Senate. I think if the president is going to delay this or wants to delay this for another 3.5 years, that we'll get enough senators to vote yes on deeming it, and we can actually just go ahead and get it done. Boxing the president in this way might actually be the best thing for him, because then he can blame Congress for doing it, and he can keep his street cred with the extreme environmental groups.
And there certainly is a growing number on both sides of the aisle that are in favor of this, so we'll see how it plays out when you all return from the recess. Sir, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg.
Nebraska Republican Congressman Lee Terry represents his state's 2nd Congressional District. He is a member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.